And you are tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, just in time for Brewocracy Now, our weekly chat with co-host John Morrow, Port Townsend City Manager, and special guest. As usual, John, you've brought some special guests for our chat. Yeah. And who do we have today?
I had to dig real deep for this one. This is a double shot of Brew Now because we have Mayor David Faber with us in the studio.
Welcome, hey, everyone. David. Thank you.
Welcome, in my mayor favor. I'm glad you could pull out a little bit of time out of your schedule to be with us. It's always great to speak with you. Usually it's been on phone. This is a first in person. It's a huge deal, a big difference to be able to speak to both of you live on the air.
Absolutely.
It's more fun to be in person because you can see what Tim's up to. And I said this a few times, but that board there is intimidating. And Tim, you're doing 1,000 things at once. And we just get to have a conversation. So I feel like I'm off easy on this one. And to be honest, probably so with Mayor Faber.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tim, for your magic.
Oh, and not at all. Just glad to have you here.
So, look, Tim, just Mayor Faber has about 15 or so minutes. I think you're a man running from thing to thing, but maybe the thing while we've got an audience listening, people can tune in any first, second, or third Monday, almost every first, second, third Monday of the month to listen to City Council, and David presides over those meetings. But, you know, this is a little more informal and maybe a chance to understand a little bit about the role of a City Council member, particularly the mayor. And I don't know if you want to freeform in that direction, what's on your mind, but the actual role as a working person, which I believe all seven City Council members are, other requirements to your day, to your life, to your family, somehow you squeeze in being mayor as well. And it's not like a, you know, mayor of Seattle kind of situation where that's your full-time job. So maybe we can unpack that just for a few moments.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Describe the role of being on Port Townsend City Council and as the mayor is being a theoretically part-time gig. I work a full-time job as an attorney here in Port Townsend, and then need to kind of rush around and make sure I can walk my dog, say hi to my wife occasionally, and then still, you know, do my work both privately and for the public. But you know, I love my community here, and it works out pretty well.
Yeah. And as you're walking that dog, are you approached by citizens of this fair town every now and then asking you questions or giving you their concerns?
I'm amazed that I don't get approached more often while I'm on the dog walks. I get approached like if I'm in the co-op or Safeway and in coffee shops and so forth. But yeah, I'm surprised that I walk my dog probably about 2 to 3 miles a day and don't get as many comments or questions as I would expect. So I invite anyone if they see me out walking around, if you don't know what I look like, we'll try and make sure that you know what
I
look
like.
Go to
the City Council website and you can see David's headshot there.
Yeah. Do you have a big, mean dog? Maybe that's the reason.
Well, my dog is a little bit leash aggressive when it comes to other dogs. So I try and keep her away from other dogs. But she's pretty friendly overall, yeah.
She knows a Port Townsend municipal code, like the back of her paw.
Yeah, she's an expert.
Well, yeah. I can imagine. So when you're in the co-op, yep. And let's say you're approached by somebody, because this was kind of our reason for being here on the air with Mr. Morrow, was perhaps rumor control or providing a forum that's directly with our elected and appointed officials that is a conduit to getting out. It's the sitting on the chair in the coffee shop, informal talk. Mm-hmm. When people approach you, their concerns, the concerns in Port Townsend are many. What's risen to the top lately?
Well, we get your typical frustration over deer, potholes, housing affordability. Those things are frequently brought up when I get approached by people. So, unfortunately, you mentioned in the squashing disinformation kind of piece of this, and I find that, unfortunately, a lot of the people who I see in the social media sphere spreading misinformation, not, I don't think, maliciously frequently, my guess is they don't feel connected as much to city government. And they're not the ones who typically approach me and ask me questions. I'm not sure if they're intimidated or they don't know who I am, but I would love to talk to more of the people who do have serious concerns about the way things are going, and hopefully we would have the opportunity to to correct the proverbial record.
And I know we don't have a whole long time with you, but you just mentioned perhaps three things that have been that go back, I think, decades in Port Townsend.
Oh, yeah.
You know, potholes are one. Deer is another. Actually, the poplars lining Sims are. This is not a new issue. These are things that have been with us for quite a long time. Is there a feeling that the things are coming to a bit of a head on this now, or has it always been? Has it always been this way?
There's certainly one interpretation could be that some things are coming to a head. John and I talk frequently about the fact that we need to start taking kind of making hard decisions in the city government. You know, there's been years of deference on. Or deferral, I don't know, deference is a word, off the, you know, not addressing some major issues or, you know, kind of doing just little bits and pieces around the edges and things like the poplars. I know there's been work on that for decades, but there's now serious issues there that need to be addressed. Same with the potholes, you know, we have, 88 miles of paved roadways and, for years it was, oh, this is way too expensive to pay for, so we can't really, like, let's not even necessarily focus that much energy on it. And it doesn't help that our budget was slashed by Tim Eymann's initiatives years ago, and then the Great Recession, we've never really fully recovered there. But, you know, just trying to come around to finally dealing with some of those issues in a kind of comprehensive and thoughtful way, but you know, no longer just being able to pretend that we can't deal with them. And and anytime we are dealing with change, some people are going to be very upset. You know, that's the reality.
I think there are two themes that Mayor Faber has hit on that I tend to thread through these conversations with you, Tim, and anybody attending. And one of those, I think, is very much, I think Mayor Faber hits it on the head. For whatever reason, there's just a number of things that I also agree that are coming to a head now, or maybe should have been brought up previously, but here we are, you know, instead of spending a lot of time figuring out how we got here and untangling blame, it's more, well, here we are with an opportunity. And I guess there's an article, we could unpack this later, but there's an article I was reading in the New York Times, somebody sent it along actually, after a meeting, and it's about innovation, creativity, and implicit bias. And how, on the face of it, you know, if you ask somebody, is innovation important to creativity? I mean, especially a community like ours, they would say, yeah. I mean, a lot of people would, at least. But when you come down to it, depending on how it's framed, I'm not summarizing the article very well here, but there is really an implicit bias to creativity when it means change. It's almost built into us as humans. And so when we're navigating difficult decisions that require, because doing nothing is a decision, doing nothing on roads or water or, you know, deer or housing, you know, taking any position is one that is a decision. You know, how do we work through that change cycle with as a community? And so that's one theme. And then the other theme, I think, is how to do partnership and collaboration better. And I'll just remark at Monday's city council meeting, you know, it was a difficult decision came to council, and there was a 2-hour conversation about it. And what I really appreciate is that they are modeling behavior for how to disagree without being disagreeable. And we're lucky because that's not the case across councils around the United States. It's not even the case at higher levels of office. But locally, we have 7 elected members who can have a conversation about nuance and difference of opinion and arrive at some sort of conclusion in a way that shows, hey, this is how to have a conversation about things. And those two things taken together, I mean, I think the second is actually integral and foundational to actually make difficult decisions that in an environment that might be fearful for some.
And I get the feeling that, you know, city government, it's like it's very human. It happens at a very human scale. Not everything that happens in the city works. And there's a glaring example of that that's often put up as an example of how a bad decision has been made. I'm hoping that we don't become risk averse because, John, what you just said about creativity, that's a very interesting concept. You have to be creative to make these difficult decisions. And I think people, in the end, hopefully, want our leaders to make those difficult decisions, even though we don't agree with them. I'm frankly glad I'm not in the position that you're in, because it's really quite difficult. And I'm glad that there's some thought going into how we can make this easier, better.
I also say, for those who are concerned about potholes, there is immediate relief available. If you go onto the city website, you can report that, and the team goes out and patches it. It's not a solution, though. I mean, it's an example, or almost like a metaphor for, we can keep filling the proverbial pothole, but to actually fix the structure of the street or decide how we want to do mobility is a bigger question. Mm-hmm. So just for those who think that we're not doing anything about potholes, that's not totally true. But boy, our streets aren't up to spec for some people's expectations. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think there's a spectrum of views on that also, on what is an acceptable condition of our streets. But Mayor Faber, you brought up something that I think needs to be spoken about clearly. Mm-hmm. And that is, I'm one of those people that really enjoys going down and renewing my license, and it's cheap, because I don't like to pay any more money than I have to. Mm-hmm. But there is a flip side to that. And can you speak a little bit to how that revenue stream affects us? Maybe the cost. What is the cost of a mile of refurbishment of a city street?
Sure. So, and you're talking about the vehicle tabs. The Tim Iman initiative brought it down to $30.
Yes.
That pretty significantly gutted the transportation budget for Washington State. And there was a lot more shared revenues coming from the state to the cities, as well as our ability to leverage money locally to do everything from, and speaking broadly, everything from ferry funding down to street repair. So all aspects of our transportation infrastructure. When you cut the tab cost down to $30, the result is far less money to go around for all those various projects. And unfortunately, local street budgets pretty much everywhere in Washington have been hit pretty dramatically by that. There's another aspect to your question, Tim, that I'm now spacing on. Something else I wanted to, the cost per mile, and John might be able to do better than me at this. I remember hearing a statistic years ago that it was about $1 million a mile to really, and that would be like basically rebuilding a road, right? And certainly not all of our roads need that, but as we go on in the future, more and more of the roads reach that failed condition that will require that pretty significant outlay of funds. We have under our public works department, have been developing for a few years now a comprehensive streets plan about making sure we have a plan to address the maintenance issues and make sure that we can get on top of it. And it's a long-term project, but it's something that there's been a lot of concerted effort to look at, figure out how we're going to strategically attack the issue, and see if we can turn the proverbial ship.
I was going to go right to Tim's heartstrings and talk about Discovery Road, given that's the title of your show, and just say that that's a good local example. And mm-hmm. I think Mayor Faber's right. I mean, that estimate about of $1 million a mile is a bit dated and kind of ballpark, but that's a $5 million project all up. Hopefully it stays at that, given the inflation of construction materials and labor. But that's about half a mile. And of course, we're doing more than rebuild the road, but it's a complete streets approach where there is going to be a multi-use path and pedestrian paths on both sides of Discovery Road as we rebuild the surface of the road. We would have to pretty much shunt most everything else we do to pay for that if that came from the city's budget. Mm-hmm. And luckily, our team has been really diligent and tenacious going after state and federal funding to the tune of $2 and $3 million grants from both the state and feds. So that's how we're able to pay for those things, because as Mayor Faber says, they are expensive. That's a half mile road. We want to do it right, and ideally not have to rebuild that anytime soon.
And yes, and the trade-off is always that, just that. There is always a price to be paid when and those priorities are taken care of.
I was going to say another thing, just riffing off that, because I made an intention today to talk about Bike Month, which is next
month.
There
we go.
And I was thinking that here's a good way to kind of weave in the fact that if you think about the things that you don't count, nationally, traffic fatalities are on the rise, which is a real counter to, from the 70s through the early 2000s, that was on the decline. And so something like almost 39,000 people lose their lives related to traffic accidents or crashes around the country just in the past year. And that's unacceptable. And so when you're thinking about street design and infrastructure and funding, to not be thinking about those problems you're circumventing or the kind of outcomes that you don't put a price tag on it necessarily, or at least overtly. But I believe that this community wants safe places to walk, bike, take transit as well as drive, so that no one has to lose a life because of a simple mistake. That's an intrinsic value in our transportation system that we are committed to building in. And it does cost, but it also, it's an investment.
Yep.
Well, on a different subject, we're headed into summer, the festival season, the tourist season. So many of our businesses are dependent upon what happens in the next 3 months. Interesting that you're a lawyer. You have a small business.
Yep.
The people that I know on the city council all basically have small businesses. So I think the small businesses are well represented in our city government. How do you see this summer shaping up? I know that here at KPTZ, our community calendar is getting longer every day. There's lots of signs of that this will be a good season, but the ferry situation is a setback. The streeteries issue, I don't know where that is right now.
I can give you an update.
Give me an update, in your favor.
All right. Well, that was what John was referring to when he talked about the discussion on Monday night that went for a couple hours, and there's definite disagreement, but came to an ultimately unanimous decision to move forward with a lottery for there to be 4 streeteries downtown, 2 uptown, and then throughout the rest of the business districts as well in town, the Tillow streeteries. We're still working on some of the finalization, final details on the ordinance to be brought back a week from this coming Monday. But it looks like there's some good support there. We're trying to thread the needle, recognize that there's some concern about parking enforcement. That's been an ongoing concern for really decades. And so we'll be trying to look at that as soon as we can as well. But as far as the rest of your question, my business isn't really affected by the festival season, right? I mean, as a lawyer, I'm just, and specifically in my area of practice, I'm not doing any DUIs or anything like that, which might increase during festivals. I'm pretty much stable year-round, which is great. But I do think, to your broader point, the festival season does look like it's going to be a big deal this year. I mean, Thing is back this summer. We have the Wooden Boat Festival, looks like it's going to be on. We have all of Centrum's festivals look like they're gearing up, getting ready to roll. It looks like it's full summer back in swing, and there's definitely going to be some competing interests as we move into that period. But I'm also very excited to see kind of the energy level come back up here, and hopefully it's a fun time.
Well, I hope so. Also, I hope that you're out on that green listening to Wet Leg.
I will be, in fact.
And without any huge worries. And maybe Mr. Moore, I'm not sure how that'll go for you. I hope just as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think I have to work on Friday, so let's be clear about that. But Saturday and Sunday, I'll be there observing the crowd and making sure that my team, who has to work during the festival weekend, has got a little bit of moral support. But look, my 7-year-old rocker daughter was insistent that we're there both days. So we'll be there Saturday and Sunday.
And given that this festival is at Fort Worden, which is completely within the city limits, are there any challenges that you foresee related to a festival of that magnitude?
Well, look, I mean, I think the planning is the deal. And when Adam Zaks was on this show as the promoter of Thing, which was super fun, you know, I think there was at least a subtle recognition of some of the logistics that go in there to make sure that everything from traffic to public safety to, you know, well-being is kind of considered. And I think his parting comment, if I'm not remembering incorrectly, was, hey, for those who are directly outside of Fort Worden in the vicinity, we really want to do our best to minimize our negative impacts. Because, of course, you know, you bring thousands of people into town. That's not what everybody wants. But for 3 days, you know, through the police team, I know through Chief Black at East Jefferson Fire and Rescue, through our streets team, we're coordinating on how to make it the most, the best experience for everybody.
Well, good. I'm glad that the work is going in. Last time, from where I sit, it went off quite well. I'm sure that it'll be a good experience this time. Also, I'm just glad to have it back. And the only reason I brought up Wet Leg, Mayor Faber, is because of your Facebook post was the first time I had heard of that group, who are now creating quite a buzz. So I heard it first from the mayor of Port Townsend. It's all about Wet Leg.
Oh, they're a fun band.
Well, and I hope that that everything goes well for you. I don't know how John and I have spent considerable amount of time on how we increase participation, how we gather opinions from people, how we do things well in advance so that it's not the first time you heard of it. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that, Mayor Faber, but let me know if you do. Now's your chance.
Sure. I mean, all we can do is try and try and try to engage and get out on as many channels as we can. I mean, this radio program is a great example of exactly that, you know, trying to get the public engaged. I think it also comes down to, you know, some of the, what I was saying before about like the people who are naturally seeming to spread the most disinformation, I think are the people who probably feel most disconnected from local government and don't trust local government. And so it's really about, in my mind, finding the way to kind of rebuild some of that public trust. And part of that's a result of social media and you know, people siloing themselves more and more in information. All we can do is try, and I think it's worth trying and redoubling our efforts all the time to engage with people and make sure they understand that their voice is important. We want to hear what they have to say and make sure that they're not caught off guard by anything that we're doing.
A lofty goal?
It is a lofty goal, and it's kind of never fully achievable, I suppose. You know, I mean, I have a vision of having all 10,000 people have a say and, you know, be motivated to participate, but that's probably not realistic. And, you know, I guess I welcome, and I've said it before, I welcome people's ideas on how we can connect better because, you know, this show, you know, you'll in another week or two be reading our second ever annual report, which is meant to, hey, here's what we're doing, here's what we did. You know, going to city council Mondays, evenings, first, second, third Mondays of the month. You know, going on Engage PT to see how you can be engaged, coming to one of our open houses. I mean, there's a number of ways that people can actually get involved. And if you've got a clever idea, I mean, I can't wait to get back into coffee shops as well as do this program because I feel like that in-person direct engagement with people is disarming. And you could work through differences of opinion with much more grace than, you know, yelling at each other from social media perspectives or even online through emails. It's just, it's human. You know, there's a certain decorum and civility that's almost required when you're talking to another person. So I think when we're back at festival season, it's also going to be public engagement season. And I really look forward to finding clever ways of connecting with people.
Well, thank you so much, both of you. You know, just one last thought about social media, because we go back to it. It's such a big part of our lives. I could understand how an elected official would be loath to follow everything that's said on social media. one thing that the first thing that comes to mind is you get something all of a sudden Port Townsend, the best place in the Pacific Northwest to live or in the country. And everybody's like, oh, no, we don't want this. We've learned certain things. Where just 5 years ago, we'd be very proud of that. And now it's like, oh, no. You know, look, look what happened in Boise. I mean, these things are immediate. They go viral, and all of a sudden, I mean, we have enough affordability problems. But an interesting aspect of social media, the changes that it's brought to our lives.
Absolutely.
So,
and now the city's on social media. You could follow us on Facebook.
Yeah, there you go.
City of PT.
Yeah, following Facebook. Thank you so much, Mayor David Faber and Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow. Brewocracy now every Thursday at 12:30 on KPTZ. We'll be back next week.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.